For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Thank you, Taigen, for this opportunity. I got to confess, as I was sitting here, I was thinking that I don't really have a good title for my talk. And usually when I give talks or write articles, I come up with these crazy titles first, and then the challenge is like, how do I give a talk or write an article that makes sense of this crazy title? And this time I sort of wrote down a crazy talk and I couldn't figure out a good title. So let me throw a couple of them out there. One that I liked at first, but I don't think makes much sense. Dogen and the Newer. But none of you know who the Newer are, right? As I'll explain, the Newer are an ethnic group that live in southern Sudan. So I thought, that doesn't really work. And then I thought, Being Time and the Cattle Clock, which is kind of this cool, evocative title, but you're like, what's a cattle clock? I don't know what Being Time is. I'll talk about both of those a little bit later. And then I thought maybe Taking Dogen to South Sudan. But that sounds kind of like an anthropologist talk. I don't know. So I'll give the talk and then maybe you guys can help me figure out what the title should have been. The point of this talk, the inspiration of this talk, was to discuss this rather famous essay that Ehe Dogen, the 13th century priest who was the founder of Soto Zen, the type of Zen that we practice here, this essay that Dogen wrote called Uji, or Being Time, that's probably one of the more influential pieces, essays that Dogen has written. It's been translated a whole bunch of times, commented on a whole bunch of times. And as I was reading Uji, I was really reminded of a rather famous analysis that a British anthropologist named Sir Evans Pritchard, really was his name, wrote about how the Newer, who are a group of people who live in South Sudan, perceive time. And so I thought maybe I could read a little bit of Dogen's essay, Uji, just a couple of paragraphs, maybe paraphrase them a little bit, talk about Evans Pritchard's analysis of the Newer and how they perceive time, and hopefully this will help us do what I think it was that Dogen really wanted to do, which is to push us a little bit to understand that we experience time in a whole myriad of different ways. I think really Dogen would probably say that we are time in a whole bunch of ways, right? So let me start by reading a couple of the sections of the beginning of Dogen's essay, Uji, or Being Time. So Dogen starts off by quoting a poem from another Zen master, and I won't read all of the poem, but in the poem it repeatedly, the poem says, for the time being, da 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 da. And then Dogen, commenting on the poem, says, the time being means time, just as it is being, and being is all time. The 16-foot golden Buddha body is time. Because it is time, it has time's glorious golden radiance. You must learn to see this glorious radiance in the 12 hours of your day. The demonic Asherah with 3 heads and 8 arms is time. Because it is time, it can be in no way different from the 12 hours of your day. Although you never measure the length or brevity of the 12 hours, their swiftness or slowness, you still call them the 12 hours. As evidence of their going and coming is obvious, you do not come to doubt them. But even though you do not have doubts about them, that is not to say you know them. Since a sentient being's doubting of the many and various things unknown to him are naturally vague and indefinite, the course his doubtings take will probably not bring them to coincide with this present doubt. Nonetheless, the doubts themselves are, after all, none other than time. We set the self out in array and make the whole and make that the whole world. We must see all the various things of the whole world as so many times. So let me just step back a little bit. I think a couple of the key phrases that I want to emphasize and come back to. The very beginning, when Dogen says, time, just as it is being, and being is all time. This has gotten translated a bunch of different ways by different translators. Another translation by Carl Bielefeld translates this as, times are themselves beings. All beings are times. A different translation that I've read is, time is existence. Existence is time. Then Dogen has this kind of like psychedelic passage about the 16-foot golden Buddha body is time. Right? And I think what he's saying there is sort of this image of enlightenment, of serenity, of peacefulness is time. Because it is time, it has time's glorious radiance. You must learn to see this glorious radiance in the 12 hours of your day. So in the time that Dogen was writing, there were 12 hours in the day, unlike ours. The demonic Asherah with three heads and eight arms is time, right? So the symbol of anger and hatred and, you know, like the heavy metal monster time, is time. Because it is time, it can be in no way different from the 12 hours of your day. Then the other part that I want to come back to a little bit later in the talk, we must see all the various things of the whole world as so many times, right? So when I read this, I thought about this analysis that Evans Pritchard made of how the Newer, who live in South Sudan, perceive time. Evans Pritchard did his research with the Newer in Southern Sudan in the 1930s, and at that time, Southern Sudan was sort of one of the most remote places in the world. It still is very remote. The Newer at the time when Evans Pritchard was doing his research were pastoralists and practiced horticulture, right? So they were cattle herders mainly and also practiced some gardening, not very intensive agriculture, but some agriculture. They also were outside of any kind of the sort of universal standardized timekeeping structures that we use now. Also, probably not coincidentally, they were by and large at the time in the 1930s outside of the cash economy and outside of most sort of formal systems of state control. Sudan was colonized by the British, not very successfully. It was sort of one of the epicenters for rebellion against British rule in Africa, and British colonial control didn't really extend to the southern part of Sudan at all. The Newer is still around. When I talk about the Newer, I'm going to be talking about them as Evans Pritchard described them in the 1930s. They still live in southern Sudan. South Sudan is the newest independent country. The Newer lived through over 30 decades of civil war. When people in southern Sudan fought a war against the army of the government of Sudan and currently are experiencing continued civil war in Sudan. A bunch of causes for the civil war in Sudan. Part of it has to do with how the British played ethnic groups off of each other in order to rule Africa. And conflict in Sudan is also exacerbated by the fact that South Sudan has the third largest oil reserve in Africa, which is sort of surprising. So, they probably have very different senses of time now, but probably some of their traditional senses of time continue nonetheless. So, Evans Pritchard argued that the Newer have three different types of time. They have ecological time. They have time organized around activities, or what I'm going to call embodied time. And they have what Evans Pritchard called structural time. I'm going to call social time. He argued that these three times, ecological time, embodied time, and social time, are all interconnected as well. So the ecological time is in some ways the more straightforward time. Ecological time for the Newer, like for a lot of herding and agricultural people, is a cycle that's organized around the cycles of nature. For the Nuer, it was governed by an alternation between periods of drought and periods of rain. So they had four seasons. It wasn't actually rainy season and dry season. Interestingly, it was one season was as the rains intensified, and then a middle season, and then as the rains diminished, and then another middle season. So it was like it rains more, a brief, very rainy, it's starting to rain less, and another one. Evans Pritchard pointed out that these variations in seasons, this ecological time, corresponds to very different activities for the Nuer. In the wet season in the part of South Sudan where the Nuer live, it floods. They live in sort of the most southernmost part of the Nile River Valley. The area floods and the Nuer have to retreat to higher ground. They also practice agriculture more intensively during this period, so they shift their activities. It's much easier to herd cattle because there's a lot more pasture since it's raining. And they live in more densely concentrated villages. As the rains decrease and the land dries out, they disperse. And instead of living in big concentrated villages, they move to isolated cattle camps. It's also a lot harder to carry out agriculture, and they spend a lot more time cattle herding. And they have to spend a lot more time finding pasture for their cattle. Right? So this alternation in seasons corresponded very closely with an alternation in social activities. So Evans Pritchard argues that for the Nuer, this ecological cycle is also very much intertwined with a cycle of variations in activities. They also had lunar time periods. They had actually 12 named months that corresponded to 12 lunar phases, although apparently they didn't talk about them, use them very often. And they used the position of the sun sometimes to coordinate daily activities. But they had no concept of hours or named hours. So this is the ecological time cycle. As Evans Pritchard points out, this is also very much a sense of time that's oriented towards activities, towards embodied things that people do. And Evans Pritchard argued that for the Nuer, time is really a relation between activities. Time is perceived of and experienced in terms of the different things that the Nuer do throughout the day. And so here's this wonderful little quote. I kind of tweaked it a little bit from Evans Pritchard, but he said, "The daily timepiece is the cattle clock, the round of pastoral tasks. The better demarcated points of time are taking the cattle to the corral, milking, driving the herd out to pasture, cleaning the corral, etc." So he argued that for the Nuer, time really was about activities. And since most people were doing similar activities, when they needed to coordinate things with people, they could say, "Come find me at the time of bringing the cattle in from pasture," or "Come find me at the time of milking cows." Now, this time, like ecological time, is a cyclical time, sort of in different cycles, the cycle of daily routines and the larger cycle of seasonal variations in those routines. The Nuer, though, also had a third time. This was social time or structural time. This is time a little bit more similar to the linear sense of time that we have, but it functioned in a very different way. Longer stretches of time for the Nuer were reckoned by references to social groups, not to abstract numbers in a calendar. So all Nuer men are part of an age set. Like a lot of groups, they're organized into sort of generations, about 5 to 10 year groups of men are in an age set, and there are 6 different age sets in Nuer society. And these are groups, social groups of men that are ritual groups, groups that they also help each other, participate in activities together. And Evans Pritchard says that when the Nuer talk about linear time, when they're trying to place something that happened in the past, They either refer to it as something significant that happened in their village, so the time when the flood was extraordinarily unusual, or they reckon it in terms of an activity that that particular age set was engaged in. So the year that the Thut age set had its initiation ceremony, for instance. And this gives them more of the linear concept of time that we have. But again, it's a linear concept of time, but one that's very much tied to social activities. So Evans Pritchard argued that this meant that time for the newer had a very different feeling, a very different flavor than time does for us. He argued that the quality of time varies according to seasons and activities. He said, quote, time has not the same value throughout the year. So dry season time, when they lived in dispersed cattle camps, was more uneventful, more monotonous. The routine of taking cattle out and finding pasture was kind of a repetitive routine. But the wet season, when they lived in concentrated villages, was more social time, time when they were interacting with each other more often. So there were more unusual things that would happen. There was more important rituals that would happen when people were together. So time varies according to seasons and activities. He also said that time is perceived in the relation of activities to one another, right? So the newer didn't, as we do, he argues, think about the time of an activity, but rather the activity that sets the time, right? We tend to perceive activities in relation to time, right? It's time for zazen, it's time to go to work, it's time to do whatever. The newer, he argues, would think about it the other way around. That's the activity that comes first. And finally, he argued, this is most interesting, I think, they had no word or expression for time in the sense of this abstract thing. So he argues they couldn't have had any sense of time as fleeting, or time as external, or time as something that is running away from us or getting away from us, right? So I think when we turn and examine how time functions in our society, we can see some, obviously, some sharp differences and also some parallels in some ways, too. Time in our society, of course, is social. We live in a world where we've agreed to divide up the day into so many hours, divide up months into so many days. We've agreed to use this standardized universal time, right? And this is a social agreement that in some ways we can't escape. If I don't show up and teach class at 8:30, I'm in trouble. If you don't get to work whenever it is that you need to get in work, right? You pay some kind of penalty for that, right? So it's a structure that is imposed upon us in a bunch of ways. It's also imposed upon us, and we reinforce it in how we talk about time. So if you think about the metaphors that we use socially to talk about time, they tend to be in two groups, right? Often we talk about time as time flies, time crawls, right? As like an animate thing, but an animate thing that's exterior to us. We also, of course, often talk about time as a commodity. You gain time, you lose time, you waste time, you save time. You spend time, gain time. All of these metaphors, of course, deeply impact our activities, and deeply impact also how we perceive ourselves. When you can start thinking about standardized time, you can start judging the amount of work that you do, your labor, in terms of time, and you get paid in terms of the time of labor that you engage in, right? And so, obviously, this argument has been made by someone more influential than me, with a big beard. Once you can think about time as tied to commodities, you also, in a sense, are encouraged to think about your own labor, your own body, your own activities as something that you sell, or the labor of others as something that you can buy. Right? We start thinking about we start alienating our own bodies in some ways as we hand it over to being bought or sold, or as we subject it to sort of standardized time. We also, I think, at another level, start thinking about time as this thing that is external to us, that maybe controls us as an external, abstract structure that we have to live with. And I think it becomes very easy once we do that to also think about other people as external objects and our relationships with other people as how do we organize these objects and things in ways that serve our own purposes, rather than thinking about interconnection, right? But I think Dogen is also telling us that this time, clock time, is of course part of our experience of time, part of how we are time, but that we also are time in a bunch of other ways, and there are a bunch of other things that also are time. So when he says, the 16-foot golden Buddha body is time, because it is time, it has time's glorious radiance. You must learn to see this glorious radiance in the 12 hours of your day. Right, so we have clock time and we have glorious golden Buddha time. And I think if we think about some of the parallels with the newer, we can see how, although we don't pay attention to it as much, we also have ecological time and we also have embodied time and activity time in a bunch of different ways. We have ecological time not just in the seasons and the way in which they're chopped up, but I often feel like the quality of time really varies depending on the season, and I feel it really sharply right now. I grew up most of my life really close to the equator, outside the United States actually, where the difference between night and day like varies really just a tiny amount. And it was only when I went to high school that I moved somewhere much further north that suddenly the days and nights expanded, and for me it was this weird thing. I mean, I understood it, like, mentally, but to experience the expansion and contraction of days and nights. And for me, it's always this time in the summer when the days are getting shorter, that I really, that time period as it's starting to get dark, I really want to be out there and experience it and hang on to it before it goes away and it's cold and dark all the time. But it has like a particular quality to it, I think. And we can think of a bunch of other examples, right, of sort of how our perceptions of time are also ecological perceptions of time. Time is also, I think, for us, activity time. We tend to think about, you know, sort of work time and school time and time regimented by the clock. But the types of activities that we engage in, I think, the way in which we embody time, also kind of can escape clock time, can be maybe not newer cattle time, but, you know, I think of Zazen time, right? Zazen time is, of course, 35 minutes. But it's also often very different. Sometimes I feel myself kind of getting lost, and you know, like sometimes it drags on like crazy. If you've ever sat a session and your foot is hurting and it's fallen asleep and you're back and you're like, when is Kokyo gonna hit? When is the bell gonna ring? And sometimes that 35 minutes just goes by incredibly quickly. So time as embodied can speed up or slow down, right? And I think we can experience this a bunch of other ways. When you're doing something, a pleasurable embodied activity, I think for me often, I feel like time kind of slows down or speeds up, or I sort of am outside of time in some ways. So I think what Dogen is urging us to do is to not just pay attention to the different ways in which we experience time, but I think also to not see ourselves as separate from time, to see ourselves as time, and to see all the other many things as also time. Maybe different types of time, but also as time that we're also part of. So I want to finish by reading another little passage in Dogen's Uji, and then I'll see if by now maybe you guys figured out a good title for my talk. So Dogen writes, "Hence, pine trees are time. So are bamboos. You should not come to understand that time is only flying past. You should not only learn that flying past is the virtue inherent in time. If time were to give itself to merely flying past, it would have to leave gaps. If you fail to experience the passage of being time and hear the utterance of its truth, because you learn only the time... Oh, you fail to experience the passage of being time and hear the utterance of its truth because you learn only that time is something that goes past. The essential point is every entire being in the entire world is each time, an independent time, even while it makes a continuous series. Inasmuch as they are being time, they are my being time." So I think I'll leave it there and see if you have any questions. I love that image of, like, if time flies, then, like, where is time? Then there are, like, gaps in time. It's kind of a psychedelical passage in Dogen. Anyway. Comments, questions, good titles? I like the cattle clock one. Yeah, I mean, Evans Pritchard says that their sense of history is very shallow. There are six age sets, and that comprises, he says, it's not exact 10 or 15 years each, but he says it's almost a century. But he says that their historical sense very quickly becomes sort of mythic, right? That there are events that they talk about that happened, but they don't place them on a particular date. Yeah.
It's really the event that's important, not so much the actual year or month or some quantitative value.
Yeah, it's the event, it's the activity, and the people who were involved in that activity, and their relationship to the people who are still alive that's important, rather than the time that that activity happened. Right? And if you think about it, we tend to prioritize the first and pay a lot less attention to the activity and to the connections between people who experience things.
I just had a comment sort of related to what you were saying about living near the equator. In the last 4 years, I've been in a bunch of different sort of climate areas. And I lived in Scotland for 4 years. Fun in Chicago with such severe seasons where you get to really feel how much change is, like you said. But in Scotland, it seemed like one day at the end of October, you wake up and the leaves just went somewhere, but you don't know where.
Yeah.
And at the end of November, the sun would rise at 10 and it would set at 2. And then on the converse, I went up north in Scotland on a boots retreat, actually, and the sun would set 11:30 p.m. No, a.m. Yeah, p.m.
Yeah.
And rise at 2:30 a.m.
Right.
And I remember one of the priests said, "Man, those birds must be so tired." And then sort of also another on that same retreat, the guy was talking about how, I can't really phrase it the same way, but that, you know, life is this precious experience we have, and yet people use the phrase "killing time."
Yeah.
When you think about it, it's sort of a very grave thought.
Yeah, but you know, I think a lot of us spend, I know I do, spend a lot of time like waiting for something else to start. Or, you know, wishing that what I was doing now isn't what I was doing now, and can I just get to that fun thing that I want to do, right? Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe because we're experiencing it as flying away, we keep living in those gaps that aren't gaps. Waiting for something else to happen is waiting for something else to happen time, right? Yeah. Oh, sure. Well, he uses this phrase a bunch of times. I think the one that I like maybe is, although you never measure the length or brevity of the 12 hours, their swiftness or slowness, you still call them the 12 hours. Before that, he talks about the golden Buddha. You must learn to see this glorious radiance in the 12 hours of your day.
That was a sentence that stuck out to me the most, because I'm wondering how intentional his use of your day versus the day is.
Yeah.
And the relativity of that. Because I think that was fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And he uses like personal pronouns a whole bunch in this essay, which also strikes, I think, kind of like a, I don't know, doesn't seem very Buddhist, right? And I think he's doing it on purpose, right? So the last passage that I read, the essential point is every being in the entire world is each time an independent time, even while it makes a continuous series. Inasmuch as they are being time, they are my being time, right? And I think often that, like, my, I possess something, sound odd to Buddhist ears, but I think he's making that point that, like, time is the time that we experience, and you're going to experience time a little bit differently than how I'm going to experience time. But we're all time. But Taigen probably knows the Japanese better.
Well, just two quick things. That part of that is that he's emphasizing that time is not some external objective thing. It's you. It's your time. It's each of us. It's our being. So it is personal in that sense. But the thing about the 12 hours and the change in time, you know, in the seasons, the 12 hours in China and Japan and Dogen's time, the 12 hours of the day were not objective clock time. There were 6 hours between dawn and dusk and between dusk and dawn. So what an hour was changed depending on how the seasons changed. So when there was more time, more daytime, those 12 hours, the hours were longer during the day and shorter during the night. So it's, they're not static, objective things like we think of as hours. It's a very different way of experiencing our time.
But I think he's also talking about sort of measurement time and experience time,
yeah,
and trying to get us to see how they're interrelated.
All of this has to do with our Zazen experience and how we experience our lives.
Right.
And that kind of, it's interesting that we're not present with something, we're more forward. And actually, we're both the same. It's present.
Sure. Yeah. even if that's confused time, fully inhabit confused time. Even if it's angry time, fully be aware that it's angry time or golden radiant time. Yeah, yeah. Have to know enough about that person to be able to relate it to an event that would make sense to them, too.
It's handy to be able to say,
of course, yeah.